The BP well is dead. Long live the cleanup.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles. Hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Bill Radke. It is the midday update from Marketplace.org. Monday, September 20th is the date. The Coast Guard says that BP oil well in the Gulf of Mexico is officially, permanently sealed.
Also today, avoiding the accidental $35 latte and the unjustified $80 taxi fare. But first,
the Coast Guard's declaring the cement plug a permanent fix marks an official end to the Gulf of Mexico oil spill, one that lasted almost 5 months. The aftermath of a disaster will last much longer. Here's Marketplace's Elisa Roth joining us now. Hi, Elisa.
Good morning.
I saw the price for a share of BP jumped 1.5% after the government declared that well officially killed. But BP is still out a lot of money for damages. What does all this mean for the company?
Well, BP has set aside $32 billion to pay for all of this. But it's already spent $9.5 billion, including a bunch it's paid out to people like fishermen and hotel owners who lost business because of the spill. I talked to Christine Tiscareno this morning. She's an equity research analyst at Standard & Poor's in London. She thinks BP's probably going to be fine in the end.
They're not out of the woods yet. They have managed to control certain aspects of it.
One of the things that's still getting sorted out are the fines that BP's going to owe under the Clean Water Act. Now, the amount could vary a lot depending on whether it has to pay for all the oil that was spilled or if it can subtract the oil that it managed to clean up. In any case, that'll likely end up being well into the billions of dollars.
And Elisa, when will BP start drilling in the Gulf of Mexico again?
Not to sound all melodramatic here, but BP may never drill there again. No deep water drilling is allowed there until the end of November, and Congress could end up passing laws that would keep BP out of the Gulf permanently because of its lousy safety record. Tiscareno from S&P thinks that would be bad for the U.S. because she says that the U.S. needs BP as much as BP needs the U.S., but she said it is possible that BP could be banned from the Gulf for good.
Marketplace's Elisa Roth, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
A Pentagon spending bill is in the Senate this week, and that's become a magnet for all sorts of causes that you may not associate with defending the homeland. Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports from Washington.
Senate leaders will try to jump on board with amendments to repeal the military's don't ask, don't tell policy and to allow young illegal immigrants who go to college or join the military to become citizens. What does that have to do with defense programs? Former Army Secretary Luis Caldera says it'll create new recruits for military service.
They're immigrant children who are very patriotic and want to serve, and yet they have this obstacle.
Another group of senators could try to ban Clean Air Act spending by the Environmental Protection Agency. Todd Harrison at the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessment isn't surprised by the extraneous amendments.
Because everyone knows that if you want to get something passed, this is a good vehicle to do it.
This year's fight over the amendments will likely delay the bill's passage until after the election. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
You heard John mention illegal immigration finding its way into the defense spending bill. Well, former Secretary of State Colin Powell said yesterday illegal immigrants do essential work in the U.S. and that he has firsthand knowledge of this because they fix his house. Powell was on NBC's Meet the Press, urging his fellow Republicans to support immigration generally. He said the U.S. should offer illegal immigrants a path to legal status because they do work that needs to get done. Now, he did not specify whether he hired illegal immigrants directly or whether they showed up at his house with the contractors.
Call it the $35 cup of coffee. That's what can happen if you buy a latte without enough money in your bank account and your bank maybe hits you with an overdraft charge. Marketplace's Eve Tro tells us about a Columbus, Ohio bank that says it wants to help customers avoid the extra fee.
With Huntington Bank's new 24 Grace program, if you overdraw funds, you get a text message that basically says,
you have 24 hours to give us our money.
That is, if you've signed up for bank emails or text messages. Only 5% of Huntington's customers have so far. Most customers have to check online or by phone to know if they've overdrawn. But Huntington CEO Steve Steinhauer says the new policy will change that.
We intend to promote alerts, mobile and text, that will help them manage their money better.
He also says customers who constantly check their balance right before payday can relax a little.
it will accelerate their cash flow by a day.
But if customers don't cover overdrafts by the next day, they get charged $23. Ben Popkin at Consumerist.com says that's the catch.
The fee is a fee. Even if it's delayed, it's still going to hurt. Before we punch you, we'll give you a 24-hour chance.
He says it's better for most customers if the bank declines a charge or a check when there isn't enough money in their account. I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
Now to the big debate over extending the Bush tax cuts. Let's say hello to Julia Coronado, chief economist for North America at BNP Paribas in New York. Hi, Julia.
Good morning.
So Congress is debating these Bush tax cuts, whether to extend them. Julia, I saw a poll today showing most Americans think increasing taxes on anyone right now, including the top earners, would slow this economy and kill jobs. How true is that?
I think it's definitely true that, you know, we're at a very fragile point in the recovery. The recovery slowed. We're at a fairly weak pace of growth. And if you raise taxes on anybody, that will, to some greater or lesser degree, slow growth further. So in the short term, I think it's clearly a good idea to forestall that kind of weight on the economy. And over the longer term, I don't think anybody would argue that taxes need to be part of resolving the deficit problems we are facing. But we also have to cut things on the spending side, too. We've got entitlement reform that is long overdue.
Well, this is what I don't get then, Julia. Cutting entitlements takes money out of people's pockets, just like raising taxes does. Wouldn't they have the same effect on the economy?
Well, what we're dealing with is a demographic transition in our country, in our society, where we've made a lot of promises of benefits that people receive in retirement that we just can't afford. And if you actually adjust people's expectations and behavior so that they stay in the labor force longer and remain productive economically for longer, that can actually be positive for the potential growth rate of the economy. So that keeps them working longer, and that's good for the economy.
Julia Coronado, chief economist for North America at BNP Paribas. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Today we found out when the U.S. recession actually ended, in June of 2009. The National Bureau of Economic Research says that makes the economic downturn, which began in December of 2007, the longest recession the nation's endured since World War II. That recession may have caused some long-term economic problems. A report out today by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD, cut its growth forecast for the U.S. economy and laid out some suggestions to get American deficits down and the economy back on track. Angel Gurria is Secretary General of the OECD, and he's with us now from New York. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How do you do?
Doing well. According to the OECD, what's the state of the U.S. economy?
Well, it's recovering. With a bit of a slowdown in the third and fourth quarter as we see it, but it is recovering. We will not have double dips, but we have to take a medium and long-term look at some of the measures we have to take in order to keep it moving and to keep it growing.
I want to talk a little bit about some of those measures. There are some unpopular recommendations in this report, including the value-added tax and eliminating over time the mortgage interest deduction. Those two items are going to be very difficult to do. How do you recommend the government do those things?
Well, the value-added tax in particular is something we have been looking at for really a long, long time. And what we're looking at are ways in which the United States can, if not balance its books, go back to a situation where the deficit is manageable and where the debt to the as a relation of your GDP stops growing and ideally starts going down.
Give us a brief primer. I mean, just a few lines about what exactly is a value-added tax.
It is a more efficient. It is a more equitable, and at the same time, it can be graduated better. It is has proven to be also a better distribution of the burden. We believe that consumption and taxing, perhaps carbon emissions, are better ways of going about raising taxes than taxing income.
But pretty unpopular ideas all the way around, I can imagine.
It's a question of making the consequences transparent of going one way or the other. And also, in the end, this is about helping the government to have the necessary resources in order to help the neediest.
Mr. Secretary, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Angel Gurria, Secretary General of the OECD. You're listening to the Midday Update for Monday, September 20th. I'm Steve Chiotakis. For the latest look at the markets, check out the numbers at our website, marketplace.org. Now, the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics around the world and how it affects us here in the United States. The price of gold has surged to another record high. It's hit more than $1,280 an ounce in London trading today. But is the yellow metal flashing a warning signal about the state of the U.S. economy? Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us right now from London with the latest. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
So the latest spurt in the price of gold bullion, what's it telling us?
It's not a good sign, unless you've got a few bars stashed under your bed.
Yeah, that's right.
I guess you don't. But it clearly reflects jitters about the state of the U.S. economy in particular, fears of a double-dip recession, and specifically worries that in order to counteract another slowdown, the Federal Reserve, when it meets tomorrow, may announce that it's wheeling out the printing presses again and pumping more dollars into the system. Neil McKinnon is a currency specialist with VTB Capital Group.
The markets believe that the Federal Reserve will print more money, which is sort of undermining the U.S. dollar. And as far as investors are concerned, they're losing confidence in paper currencies generally.
This is the key, of course, worries about the value and stability of other major currencies too. The euro, the yen, the British pound are also boosting the price of bullion as the ultimate safe haven and store of value.
Yeah, I'm curious, Stephen, is this just speculators at work? I mean, investors betting that there's going to be, you know, this burst of inflation? Or are there some other factors pushing up the price of gold bullion?
Yes, on the supply side, gold mining companies are struggling to produce any more of the metal, and non-speculative demand is holding up. There's still a solid base of industrial demand. There's demand for gold jewellery, still very high, especially in India. And central banks have been buying more gold for their reserves. Two Asian central banks in particular reportedly bought 15 tonnes of the stuff last week.
That's a lot of gold. All right, Marketplace's European Bureau Chief Stephen Beard in London. Stephen, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
Relations between China and Japan are at their lowest level in years, just less than a month after China surpassed Japan to become the world's second biggest economy. China is threatening strong countermeasures if Japan does not release a Chinese boat captain detained by the Japanese nearly 2 weeks ago for sailing near a chain of islands in the East China Sea. Both nations lay claim to those islands. What's the big fuss? Here's Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz.
The islands at the center of this fight are too remote to live on, so while the heat between China and Japan over who owns them, the flame is being fueled by what's underneath them, says China political scientist Zhou Yongshen.
If Japan gains ownership of these islands, it means a great deal of natural gas will suddenly fall into Japan's possession. Now, this is the heart of the problem.
Ranked by GDP, world economy number three, Japan, has virtually no reserves of natural gas, yet relies on that resource for 14% of its total energy consumption. It has to import all of it. World economy number two, that would be China, has domestic reserves but is also a net importer of natural gas and is on track to double its consumption within 5 years. These islands would be a nice addition to either country. Oh yeah, I almost forgot Taiwan. It lays claims to the islands too, but with its economy ranked at number 25, it's having a harder time getting a word in. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Monday, September 20th. I'm Bill Radke. For the latest look at the markets, may I commend you to the numbers at marketplace.org. Hawaii has always been a tourist draw, but lately the state is pulling in a ton of TV and film production. Now, some of that business is thanks to a certain fictional plane crash and smoke monster. Some of it, though, is a nod to the 60s and 70s. Here's reporter Heidi Chang in Honolulu.
Hawaii is riding a pretty good wave right now when it comes to luring TV and film productions to its shores. Just ask Georgia Skinner. She's at the helm of the state's Creative Industries Division.
This has been an incredible year for Hawaii in terms of our production expenditures. It is the biggest year ever for our state, and we are at $347 million right now.
Skinner says the state's tax incentives have played a big role in attracting film business from other parts of the world.
It's not so much anymore the beauty of your location or the qualified crew. If you don't have your tax incentive, which is the first thing productions ask about, then you're not a competitor.
The global success of the TV series Lost, which was filmed entirely in Hawaii, helped convince the state to increase its tax incentives. And because of its positive partnership with Hawaii, ABC is back again filming another series called Off the Map. But the show getting the most buzz this fall is the one that put Hawaii on the map. A new version of Hawaii 5-0 debuts tonight. To celebrate, CBS held a special premiere on the beach in Waikiki. One of the main actors in the new Hawaii 5-0 is Daniel Day Kim, who also starred in Lost. During that show's six-year run, Kim saw a spike in TV and film production in Hawaii.
It showed that creative people can live here and work here, and there's a certain spirit to this island that extends to crews and cast that come here, and I really appreciate the spirit that they bring to work every day.
The original Hawaii 5-0 premiered in 1968 and ran for 12 seasons. Now, many like Georgia Skinner hope the new series will bring even more film crews and visitors to the islands.
Hawaii 5-0 coming back to the islands and really putting Hawaii in everyone's living room every week is the greatest boon for our state that there could be.
In Honolulu, I'm Heidi Chang for Marketplace.
Didn't get a whole lot of play in the news last week, what with exploding natural gas lines and Cuba laying off 500,000 workers. But the advocacy group once known as the Private Equity Council changed its name to the Private Equity Growth Capital Council. The consortium says it's broadened its membership to include smaller, less visible firms to help raise money for companies. Fortune magazine's Alan Sloan thinks there's something else going on. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Steve.
Now, what's with all these name changes?
Well, growth capital sounds a lot like venture capital, and it sounds a lot better than private equity. In the debate that's about to start in Washington about how to tax managers' pieces of their investors' profit.
And what do some people in Washington have to say about it?
Right now, the manager's piece of buyout profits is taxed at the very, very low capital gains rate if the investment's been held for more than a year. The debate going on now is how much to raise these rates, because this is really fee income, which should be taxed fully. And the money raised by this is supposed to go to offset the cost of extending unemployment benefits.
Now can't the so-called buyout barons, can't they argue, Alan, that they've added investments, they're now more diverse, and that the name change was warranted?
Well, I'm sure they could argue that, but that doesn't mean it's true.
So in the long run, Alan, is changing their name and adding new members going to make that much of a difference?
Well, you have to think of this as chicken soup, as a cure for a disease you think you might have. It may not help, but what can it hurt? And besides, to mix my animal metaphors, why not try to put lipstick on your pig?
Surely you're not saying Wall Street is one big trough, are you, Alan?
I would oink, but we're not allowed to do that on public radio.
No, certainly not. Fortune magazine's Alan Sloan joining us from New York. Alan, thanks.
You're welcome, Steve.
And finally, next time you go to Prague in the Czech Republic, take getting ripped off by a taxi driver off your to-do list.
Yes, the Czech firm Etnetera said it has developed a mobile phone application called Virtual Meter. It measures the distance. It calculates the proper cab fare in Prague.
All right, so the company introduced this app. Do you know what they said? Everyone, quote now, everyone will be able to verify right in the taxi whether the driver is trying to rob him.
Good to know.
Pretty direct, huh?
Convenient.
In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis.
And I'm Bill Radke. Thanks for listening to the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.